Navigating change, one story at a time, we share insights from leaders tackling the challenges of today's digital world. Welcome to Innovation Tales, the podcast exploring the human side of digital transformation.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Innovation Tales. My guest today is Riad Ziri, and we'll be discussing low-code, especially the impact it can have on people in both business and IT functions. No doubt you have heard of the term. The low-code debate has been raging for over a decade now. Whether you believe anyone can build software, or you've had painful experiences with the approach, you want to hear the inspiring story that my guest was kind enough to share. He paints a vivid picture of how an actual organization and its people adopted a novel approach, dealt with challenges, and delivered a tremendous amount of value. Of course, he also provides practical advice to business and technical leaders. Riad loves guiding and federating people to deliver the best possible outcome. He has founded and grown his own company, Iris Consulting, a successful hands-on CEO. He has been delivering enterprise applications using low-code for 18 years. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Riad Ziri.
Riad, welcome.
Thanks. Hi, Alex.
It's nice of you to have found the time for this. I know that running your own business is never easy, but you managed to do it with a house full of kids. How many kids do you have and what's your secret?
Oh my God. I've got 4 kids at the moment, yeah. And the secret is, yeah, so I haven't done all the job myself. Well, I said that's the good thing. So otherwise, I think it would have been really, really a big challenge. So the secret is we've been like doing this like as a team.
Teamwork.
It was the two of us and obviously, yeah.
So. I'm sure you are. Let's talk about the project. Let's talk about your business. You've created a new company, Iris Consulting, a while now. Can you share with our audience what was your vision for it and how it evolved over the years?
Yes, Iris Consulting. So I founded it like a bit more than 10 years ago now. And I initially didn't have like the real intention of like starting a new business, because in my like experience, I was a consultant, like an architect working for a software company and for many years. And I wasn't really seeing myself as like kicking off a business or whatever. But then after leaving that software company, I started just like doing some contracts on my own and with clients and everything. And there has been like different reasons for that. One of the reasons was after doing multiple contracts, I started to get a bit bored probably by just working on my own. And yeah, so that was the first, let's say, reason. Second reason was that I was seeing like I was working with like big partners who kind of pretty much all the time, like build up teams with very junior people that you have to train. And when you start training them, as you invest time in them and everything. And then at some point I was like, if I have to invest time and train people, why wouldn't I just try to train like people who would be part of my own team? And that's where everything started.
And how much progress do you feel you've made since those 10 years ago?
I think it was huge. That's huge. So because as I said, I was just one person initially. And now we are about like more than 40 people, which
wow.
is, yeah. And then everything is working pretty well, I would say, because we measure that, you know, with the customer satisfaction. And it seems like all our customers are pretty satisfied. Most of the customers we have been working with, like it's been more than 4 or 5 years, which means once we start working with a customer, they pretty much never ask us to leave.
Yeah, that's terrific.
That's for me a measurement for, let's say, success.
Yeah.
And that's more than enough for me, because if the customers are happy, if the consultants are happy, that means that's it. So that was also another reason for me. It was like to try to start this business. It was also to create an environment where we can allow consultants to be happy and do what they like, you know, in an environment where they can just, how to say it, develop themselves, okay, and progress in their career, but also be motivated and like and love what they're doing. And at the same time, it would be, you know, for clients to be happy, like, of the work that we are delivering. If your customers are happy, your consultants are happy, for me, that's all I was looking for initially. And I think we pretty much made it, because I think everyone seems happy at the moment.
Yeah, that's great. I also know that Iris Consulting is known for the low-code approach that it promotes and champions on many of the projects.
Yeah.
But I'd like to start with the basics. Maybe you can, for our audience, define... How would you explain low-code to, let's say, a business leader?
Low-code to business leaders. At the moment, you know, business leaders, when they basically, what they are in charge of like addressing the needs of their clients. To address the needs of their clients, they need systems, solutions, applications. And sometimes those applications, they can just buy them from a software provider and they just work as it is. You just come, plug them, change probably the logo on the top left of the screen, and here you go. Your project starts and your application is already up and running. That's one approach. But the challenge with that approach is that if the software doesn't really work as your users are used to work or want to use it, then the users have to adapt to that software. That's kind of the flow of it. So the other approach that that is open to them is to go for a much more flexible approach, which is using some classical programmation code, okay, like Java or maybe .NET platforms or whatever, and which allows you to kind of really address the needs precisely for your users, okay? But that approach pretty much all the time forces you to reinvent the wheel. And that's where low-code comes as a best of both worlds, to provide an approach where you've got Lego bricks, okay, which are already ready to be used, and you can just
assemble?
That you can just assemble with each other to kind of build whatever you want, which allows you to go much faster than the classical programming approach, and which is more flexible than the software approach.
Like you said, the best of both worlds.
Exactly.
Great.
Echoes of innovation.
Yeah, in this segment, we use storytelling to bring authentic insights to our audience. But I always, of course, advise my guests to use discretion with names and specifics in order to uphold the highest standards of privacy and respect for the individuals involved. But that, bearing that in mind, it would be great if you could identify and share an example of a digital transformation that illustrates the benefits of a low-code approach. And if you do have such an example, let's just start with setting the context.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so that reminds me of one of our clients, which is probably our biggest clients at the moment. And we have been working with this client for the past 5 years. When the story with this client started, so initially, they wanted to kind of put in place a CRM application. CRM, which is customer relationship management. That's a software that allows my client employees, okay, to interact with their own clients. Their client come, they call, and then they say, yes, I want to change my address. I want to do this. I want to do that. Okay. That's what they needed. And they started an RFP, to just acquire a new software to address those requirements. And basically, they have been pretty smart and pretty pragmatic. I think it's so far, it's probably one of my best projects and best customers because they had the right mindset when they started it. And I think the mindset is probably the most important ingredient when you want to start a digital transformation program or even with a small project. I think it's always the same. So it always comes to the mindset on how you are approaching it and what is your vision at the end. And you need to be ready that you can't just define the rules saying that I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do it this way and everything. Just want to probably define your target, where you want to be and where you want to go in probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years and everything. But then give yourself some flexibility on how you're going to get there. This was really what we really liked about this client.
Did they have any experience with that kind of approach, best of both worlds approach before this project? Had they had this epiphany and the flexibility that you just mentioned? Is that something that came from past experiences, or is that an insight they had without knowing anything about low code?
No, they didn't know anything about low code initially. It's probably many companies on the market at the moment. They kind of have been working with the old approach, which was more like building everything in Java, okay, so far. But they just realized that to be able to build a CRM application, and they had something about maybe less than a year to build it and to put it in production, they just realized that it wasn't feasible to address all the needs, and especially. So that's why they said, okay, we're going to check, what's on the market, something that is as close as possible of what we want to achieve. And then, which means then we would just have to address the gap between what the software is providing and how we want it to behave. And that was great because that's where we started helping them. And initially, honestly, even myself, I didn't really believe in the success of the project because they were so ambitious. And they came to me saying, okay, listen, we want to do this, 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 this. And we want it in production in 10 months.
What were the business drivers for such an ambitious vision?
The reason why they needed this CRM, because you had this organization which needed a CRM for itself, but this organization was also in charge of a whole group of other organizations. Each organization so far was self-working. Okay, mm-hmm. So each organization had its own CRM. And the purpose of this was like to reduce the cost at the scale of the whole group and say, this one is going to start a CRM, which is going to be used for as unique a central CRM for all the organization, which means in terms of cost, you would be replacing, there were, I think, about 12 organizations in the group, 12 CRM applications by a single one. And that's why they needed to put it in place as soon as possible so that they start benefiting, you know, from it. Well, from, yeah, taking the benefits from it, you know, as soon as possible and reducing the cost, obviously.
So business drivers was the increase in the shared services that the organization was relying on or the set of organizations were relying on.
Yeah,
I understand. Exactly. You mentioned that at the beginning, not everyone was convinced that this was going to be feasible in such a short amount of time. Walk us through the initial steps. I guess they must have been quite inspiring for the mood to have changed over time.
Well, the thing is, it's just a matter of commitment. Is you just need to tell yourself that, okay, I think we can do it. That's the thing. Initially, when you start saying, okay, we need to do this, we need to do that. And then you start saying, okay, it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very tough. But if we do things this way, this way, this way, this way, then it's going to work. And that's where, as I said, the mindset of the client was very important because you need to be able to make this a success. You need to be working with a client who is like pragmatic enough and willing to listen to you enough so that you can reach the end line, the arrival, the finish line, just when he wanted it. And that's the thing, because we have experience in that domain. Okay, we know how to deliver those kind of projects. We know what needs to be done and when exactly. And that's the difficulty when some clients want to take too much control on the project and how they want it to happen. And then that's when then you start like advising them and everything, but you end up like, no, we should do it this way and everything. No. This is how we want to do it. For instance, which methodology you want to use? No, do you want to go agile? Do you want to go waterfall? Do you want to go something in between? And that's the whole thing about, and there are so many constraints that you need to take into account. Like, is the customer ready to like work in agile or not? How much agility can we put in there so that, you know, the employees of that, or the internal employees of the clients are able to follow what you are asking them to do? And that's the whole thing.
Is that something that the entire team understood, or was there the need to convince people throughout the project that this is going to work? The low code is really going to deliver on those benefits.
I think the key people understood it. And those key people, they, for me, they were quite good at managing their teams to make them understand the benefits of this approach. And that's the thing. The technical leader and the business leader, both of them, they were in sync and they understood the benefits of it.
I wonder, was it smooth sailing throughout, or were there maybe like one moment where some of the stakeholders challenged the approach and were asking maybe more questions to the business and the technical leaders? Like, why are you doing this? Why are you not doing your own development, for example, or something else? So what would be, in your opinion, the hardest challenge you've had to overcome in that initial phase?
No, it wasn't smooth sailing. Okay. So it's like any project, you know, I don't know any project that is just smooth sailing. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any project. Okay. So it's just like you would be one person just coming, doing the job, and that's it. You know, after 2 days, he's gone. So no, it wasn't, because at the end, you are trying to put some very innovative tool, okay, which has its own way of working, which is like a brand new way of working, and integrate into the information system and to integrate that into the, well, with all the systems and the architecture of the client, with something that has been there for the past 10, 15 years. And then obviously you've got people in there who have been like maintaining all that infrastructure, servers, you know, everything, deployment, code, whatever it is. And obviously those people say, no, but we used to do it this way. And we used to do it this way. And we used to do it this way. No, this is not our standard. I know. but we're going to have to define the new standard because this project is coming, this tool is coming. Let's work together and identify something that is workable for the software and that is acceptable for you. And obviously, and that's how we had to accompany them, to assist them in terms of redefining some new standards that now everyone now is, yeah. So 5 years later, obviously now that's it. So all that is behind us. And now we've got everything defined, you know, on how we deploy our code, how we, so in terms of architecture, how we integrate that application with the other systems and everything. Yeah.
How did you make that happen? Did you have like a magic wand, silver bullet maybe?
Kind of, yeah. Some Harry Potter stuff, yeah, maybe, probably. Yes. It's just, the thing is, it comes down to human interaction at the end. It's all about human interaction. You need to be able to understand the people on the other side that you need to work with. And if you want it to work, you need to understand that these people have been doing the same thing for the past 5-10 years. And that's their job. And that's the only thing they probably know how to do and what to do. And you need to understand that you are asking them to kind of go a step, which is very, very high for them. So you need to thank them and be patient. And that's, I think it's all about patience in here. Understand them, explain to them. Even like, some of them are going to be like, oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I like learning new stuff and everything. I was starting to get bored. And some others are a bit more reluctant. And those ones, you need to be able to kind of, yeah, oh, see, I know you don't like this. I know it's not how you used to do it and everything, but let's go together and it's going to work. Don't worry about that. And if you need it, that's fine. Just call me. So initially, they just call you like pretty much every 5 minutes. And bit by bit, as they get used to it and everything, and they're still like, even now after 5 years, they still make one or two comments like, oh, yeah, I don't like it. Yes, but they still do it. I think they probably secretly enjoy it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you very much for sharing this very inspiring story. If you found value in this tale of innovation, please like and subscribe to help us share with a wider audience.
Blueprints of innovation.
So in this segment, Riyad, we focus on the tools that we've mentioned in our previous segment. But let's try and unpack for our audience what low-code actually is. You can walk us through some of the common characteristics and also mention, are there major differences in the various implementations, obviously vendors, of low-code technology?
Sure. As I said earlier, low-code is like Lego bricks. You have pieces of technology, components, technical components that have been created to allow you to not start from scratch every time you start a new project or every time you have to build a new functionality. So basically, you have those components. Like when I say components, it's going to be take a software application. You know, you've got a screen, you've got a drop-down, you've got a text field, you've got a connector that allows you to connect to an external system. You've got, yeah, so that's the kind of thing. And those things exist, which means you're going to be able to create a screen, for instance, where you're going to have be able to add the different fields that you want. And usually you do that visually. When you do that visually, so you have your screen, you're just starting like, I want this one on the left, this one on the right, and this one on top and everything. So one column, two columns. I want one button on the top, bottom right of the screen, and this is my stuff. I hit save, happy days, that's it. The code is automatically created. Then once you have your platform, let's say, up and running, installed, the way you use them, they all have their own like differences in terms of how they do things. But overall, the spirit is pretty much the same. Some lighter, some have been created, let's say, a few years ago, which means they are much lighter and then like, you know, they have less legacy inside, but they are probably simpler and less advanced. You can probably address less advanced requirements. And some of us have been there for the past 20 years. They have been accumulating experience over those past 20 years, which means they have created things 20 years ago that are still there in the tool. So which is probably and maybe not so good because those things created 20 years ago, they can still be useful right now, but probably they are out of date depending on what we're talking about. You've got some low code, which tools that allow you to create, for instance, website, just like simple pages very quickly. And you've got some other low-code tools that allow you to create real enterprise business applications. What I mean by that is applications that are going to allow employees into an organization to do their job.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, you were saying that it's the best of both worlds. Coming back to what you were saying at the beginning, where like on the one hand, we can just purchase an application, probably a cloud application that just does everything that you need, maybe, if your needs are rather standard, right? On the other hand, in the other extreme, let's say, you can just build any application, any enterprise software that is going to be exactly tailored to your needs. And then this third approach that we're describing here is something in between. But I think it's important also to differentiate between a low-code tool and a rapid prototyping tool. I think sometimes people will imagine that whatever sales consultant or any other expert is maybe showing is just a fancy demo. And then they expect that when they actually get the software and they start working on it, they are going to be able to write 500-page requirements documents and say, no, actually, what I wanted to do is this. But I think it's important to differentiate that, no, it's actually a rapid prototyping tool is something else entirely. This is working software.
Exactly.
Innovator's Playbook.
Yeah, then this third and last segment, we want to share practical advice with our audience. So let's try and unpack now low code, but from the point of view of a leader starting out on a journey. What can we recommend to them to do in the first phases of them going through a project that they suspect will use low code?
First thing is they probably need to have an understanding of the organization. Understanding of the organization, understanding of the requirements, understanding of the relationship that exists between business and IT. That's going to be key. Because what I've seen is when you try to bring something which is very innovative, and if there is a massive gap between IT teams and the business teams, it's very difficult to make it a success. No matter which tool or software or approach you're going to choose, if that organization, if we have that gap between the two sides, any project is going to be a challenge. That's going to be the key thing. And he or she needs to find the right approach and do some work in advance to make sure that those teams learn how to work together, because that's going to be the key. Then there are some tools out there, as I said earlier, that allow you to kind of capture the requirements into the tool, for instance, and that allow business and IT to collaborate together, and each one providing its set of skills into the tool in terms of business requirements, technical requirements, and everything, and to build something together. There are tools out there like Pega, for instance. You know, software provider is Pega Systems, made by Pega Systems. And that's a tool that we have been using for the past 18 years. That's probably the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge is not really the tool, but it's more like how the people are going to work together. And you need to provide something to put in place an environment where people are going to be free to kind of provide their expertise, work together, and not really having, how do you say it, different targets, different interests. Like, I don't know, my interest is I can only work 2 hours a week for you guys, that's it. No, you need to kind of make sure that the interest of one, they're all working into a common target.
Yeah, so like low-code approaches are ideally suited to organizations that have a lot of collaboration potential.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have an organization where the business people are expected to throw a requirements document over the wall and are not available maybe, normally, under normal circumstances, are not available to participate in the project, that may be not a good place to do a low-code approach, right?
Probably. I think, yes, that's the idea, yes. Because to really get the maximum benefit out of a low-code approach is really key collaboration. Collaboration is really, really important because the tool is very important. It allows you to build things very quickly. And the purpose of building it really quickly is obviously, yes, in a certain way that you build things faster so the duration is shorter of the project. But the key thing for that is really to demonstrate things quickly to the client, to the business people, so that they can validate things as we go. And then you know, I did end up with something that matches 100% their requirement. Well, not 10% their initial requirement, but 100% how they will want to use the tool once it is in production.
Right. That takes care of the business side of things. It's ensuring that the people will have the bandwidth and willingness, just that they know that they're expected to participate throughout the process. What about on the more IT side, the technical side? What kind of advice can we give that part of the organization when they're embarking on a project and digital transformation that involves low-code?
They need to be open to welcoming a new technology into their infrastructure. They probably have been doing things in a certain way for the past 10, 20 years. Some companies don't have a problem with that because they have been buying softwares from different software providers and each one has its own specificities. Whereas there are others that have been like having just one way of working for the past 10, 20 years. And those companies, they need to be kind of preparing themselves, embracing themselves, mm-hmm. preparing themselves, you know, for defining new standards, defining new, well, to be really open-minded in terms of, and really creative in terms of deploying that software into the infrastructure.
And from the perspective of outsourcing or at least relying on external partners, what's different? What does the organization need to do when they're doing low code versus traditional development in terms of procurement, contracting, to get the external expertise that they might not have in-house at the beginning?
Yeah, so initially, I guess, so the key advice here is really to kind of find the right partner. You need to find the right partner who's going to guide you through the darkness of the different steps of every project. And that's really where, because you can't guess by yourself, because you're going to be getting a brand new tool into your organization and you don't know how to install it, how to use it, how to deploy it, how to configure it. And that's where you need a partner who has been like, who knows how to do things properly, who has probably already done the mistakes in the past and who is going to tell you, don't do it this way, do it this way. Okay. And who's going to allow you to kind of put in place a robust foundation at the beginning of the project, who's going to allow you to maybe put in place different layers with like some generic components that you're going to be able to reuse across different applications so that you build something once and then you just reuse it like multiple times. That's really the key thing here, which is find the right partner, get trained, train your resources for the people to be able to understand and follow the pace. Because if you have a good partner, it can go pretty fast. But then you don't want your internal employees to be left on the side. You want them also to follow the pace and find a partner who is willing to kind of has the right attitude and mindset in terms of strategy. You need to find a partner who is willing to kind of train your resources, consider your resources as part of one team. Okay. This is what we have been doing with all our clients at the moment, which is the co-construction. It's not just us. We build the applications with our client employees. Okay. All together. And everyone is like, consider the same for me. You know, my team, there is no internal person or something or partner team or partner person. That's really something which is key because that's the way that these people are going to evolve and then become like seniors and experts and then they're going to become ambassadors into their own organization.
That's great. I think we've provided really good practical advice mm-hmm. to our audience. Is there any final message or topic that you would want to cover in this segment?
I think that's fine. I think we covered pretty much everything. And as I said earlier, I think one of the most important things is really the human aspect of things, because technology is one thing. Technology can be very powerful and we have tools, as I said earlier, to have been using and like have proven really that we are able to kind of deliver robust applications quickly and like in big enterprises, big companies, solutions like Pega Platform has been like doing pretty well so far. But then it's really like the human aspect where it's probably the most challenging one, where you really have to find the way of motivating, of embarking every person that is going to participate to the project into the vision. You need to align everyone into the vision. And once you manage to do that, as I said, that's when magic happens.
And that's why it's so important to have a partner that can help you through that kind of innovation.
Exactly. And that's what we try to do, you know, every project that we commit to. And yeah, so now we start getting some good experience on the technical side and on the human side as well. We try to put in place an environment where everyone can like be creative and be motivated, be happy. And once we have that, that's it. You don't have to worry about them anymore because everyone is going to be committed into going towards the same vision.
Well, on behalf of the audience, thank you very much for these insights.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Alex, for having me today. It was a real pleasure.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Innovation Tales. I hope you found Riyadh's insights into low-code as informative.